Purcell's The Drover's Wife. For Leah Purcell, the universe of The Drover's Wife is ever-expanding. From childhood memories of her mother reading the Henry Lawson original, to reimagining the story into a play, a film, a novel, and even a children's book. Now, she's shifting her work into a new medium, opera. Set to open in Brisbane this month, The Drover's Wife is a co-production between Queensland Performing Arts Centre and Opera Australia. And it blends the depth of classical music with the drama of the text to bring forth an entirely new facet of Molly Johnson and Yataka's story of survival and hardship. To find out how the transformation is tracking, I went along to the rehearsals.
Okay, so, but I'll be on that last scene. That scene is the, it's obviously the...
My name is Leah Purcell and I'm a Goa Goongri Waka Waka Murray woman. Speaking of the opera, they call me a librettist and I actor, writer, director, producer of Umbara Productions.
Leah, why did you want to turn The Drover's Wife into an opera?
To be truthful, me and my partner, we thought of everything, but in between the film and the children's book, the composer, George Palmer, approached Bain and I just before the film came out. He had seen the play, his wife read the book, and he was looking for his next Australian opera. George did Cloud Street, and he saw the book on his wife's bedside table and went, "That's my next opera." So he approached us and we didn't get back to him straight away because we were on an opera, hang on. And once the film came out, we started to think about that process. And we said, what the opera does was allow me to take the story to the next level, the large scale, the emotional intensity in the characters would carry beautifully across to the world of opera. And then, of course, my creative juices got flowing and I said I could really add the Aboriginal spirituality element to Molly's journey and bring all their mob on stage, you know, to really have that blackfella element in it. And then, of course, the music also and then intensifies the emotional journey of the characters. But what it also does is give life to the set. You know, it's a little bit filmic in the sense that I had musical interludes in the film to allow people to rest and have a moment from the story and then dive back on the journey. So I've brought that over to the opera because, you know, people know what happens throughout it. But I keep reminding people it is a story of survival, resilience and hope and love. It is a love story. It's a mother's love and then a love of convenience that Yataka and Molly share or find together in the sense of survival, of surviving in a time when it was hard, absolutely disgusting for First Nations people, but then also for women at that time.
What had been your connection to opera before that?
Good question. My connection to opera before that, not much. But I grew up in a small country town, Mergen Cherbourg. We had two channels, ABC and some other channel. And I would remember watching or flicking channels and ABC, the opera. They would have opera performances. And I was mesmerised firstly by their vocals. I think that's where I learned to sing loud, you know. And I'm pretty sure I probably watched some of the Dame Joan Sutherland, you know, because I do actually remember seeing a woman of colour. And I went, oh, wow, look at that. And she was amazing. And so I grew up watching that on TV and just mesmerised by vocals, then the costumes, then the sets, and just, yeah, would sort of try and copy her in stuff. But I also grew up watching Liza Minnelli, Doris Day, who was my hero, and Barbara Streisand. So all women with powerful voices. And I'd go and copy what they did in the mirror. And then, of course, when George approached me, I went back and said, you know, Opera Australia's been amazing giving me tickets to go and see shows. So I'd go and see a show and purely watch it for what's the set doing. Then I'd go and watch it, how the performers moved around the stage. Then I'd close my eyes for a performance and just listen to the music, you know, listen to the vocals first, understand the story, and then I'd sit on the edge of my seat looking over, looking at the orchestra and feeling what they give to the show. So they've been very generous and that education has been phenomenal, but it's also the workshops that we've done. We've done four workshops leading up to here we are in rehearsals. And through those workshops, working with opera singers, their experience, their expertise, our master of music, our conductor, Tahu Matheson, you know, just that collaboration, watching him work, you know, stepping on a few toes and going, okay, you can't do that in opera, you know, so learning the ropes so that when we get to this rehearsal period, it's a smooth sailing ship. Touch wood, so far it has been. But I'm a performer's director because I'm a performer. I know what they go through. But I'm also a collaborator. I'll push people, but then, of course, they go, Leah, we can't quite do that because you want me to hit a high A or so, you know, and you go, oh, okay. So it's been beautiful to learn what you can and can't do in this platform for this story, which makes it challenging again for me and it makes it interesting. And to find what Drover's Wife, the opera, is, has been pretty amazing as well.
Because you mentioned growing up in Mergen and Cherbourg, and I know that Harold Blair, who's considered the first Aboriginal opera star, is from, like, from those towns.
Yeah. I grew up knowing the story of Harold Blair, the opera singer, and once again on the ABC, I remember my mum calling me in saying, look at this, he's another Murray fella. And he was born at Cherbourg, taken away very, very early in his life, and one of... my elders in the family actually saw the day when him and his mum were taken from Cherbourg. So I've known of that story and, of course, working with Wayne Blair. But it does, I don't know, it makes you feel, oh, it's deadly. There must be something in that Bramber Creek water up there, you know. The talent that has come out of that area, you know, a lot of it's been with football. But to have, to keep that arts going, to keep the song line of songs going has been special. So there's a bit of pride in that. That's keeping, I guess, that song cycle alive.
My name is Nina Korba. I am a proud Kawakuku Yalanji Waka Waka woman, and I am a classical soprano playing Molly Johnson in this new opera.
Nina, how are you feeling about stepping into that role of Molly?
There's a huge sense of responsibility and very big shoes to fill, knowing that Auntie Leah has played this role both in the play and then in the film as well. She is so intimately connected to this story and this character. And very early on in the process, I did articulate that to Auntie, going, hey, this is something big, and she's kind of you, she is your character. And she was very quick to say, no, this is your Molly. You're gonna take her and you're gonna find who she is to you. So having that permission from my director very early on was a huge gift. And so it's been lovely to try and find out who my Molly is in this interpretation.
I know that the soprano range is one that's often associated with, like, maidens and tragic figures. Mm. And that's not necessarily the case with Molly Johnson.
You're so right. Sopranos are very frequently seen as the damsels or the delicate flowers, but they are also quite often these tragic heroines with a lot of power and authority in them as well. You look at the larger operas that I have no business being in, such as your Wagners and the Verdis, all those juicy dramatic roles, there is definitely scope for those kind of voices to really sit prominently here. And there's something so violently raw about Molly that does lend itself to that dramatic scale. So I think it actually is a really beautiful pairing, and I'm excited for Australian audiences to witness that.
What was your connection to The Drover's Wife prior to taking on this opera?
My connection to The Drover's Wife firstly came through Auntie Leah. She is my blood auntie, so having that connection was always something very tangible. Even growing up, I was always very aware of what Auntie Leah was doing in the arts, and she was definitely an inspiration for me in the sense of seeing her do the thing. So, of course, I can do it. She's doing it, so it'll be me next. In terms of family connection, because of that connection through Auntie, the story, particularly through Yadika's line, is one that I share through my blood relations as well. So there is something deeply personal about this story, and it's something that Auntie and I are both very aware of, how unique an opportunity it is to have two First Nations women who are from the same bloodline creating something from their own individual art forms together. It's such a unique and special experience that we're really just trying to cherish it as much as possible.
Yeah. What do you think opera can bring to this story? Because it has been, it's been a play, it's been a film, it's been a book.
Mm.
What do you think opera brings that's unique?
Opera is this beautiful collision of all of the art forms, in my opinion. You've got the drama of the text, you've got the music, which can add so much depth and nuance to the characters' thoughts and their emotional journey. The set itself is a character. It is so powerful, and in my opinion, I feel like a she. She is a beast on stage. She's so magnificent to behold. Opera also allows this canvas where the dreaming can really take a forefront. Audiences from a Western classical tradition are kind of used to and preconditioned to understand the suspension of disbelief for dreaming or magic, as it's more frequently looked at in opera. So I don't think it's going to look foreign to Australian audiences, or really to any opera audience, but the way we're using all of these elements is very new and electric.
When you reflect on Blackfellas within the scope of Australian opera, what do you wish people knew or understood?
When I think about my elders who have come before me, be it in opera or be it in other cultural endeavours, it brings me to tears, because I think of all the many decades of work and fire that they put behind all of their initiatives and all of their pleading to be seen and to be heard and to be acknowledged as equal and beautiful within our culture. There's a great feeling of responsibility with a new work like this, and the fact that it's being seen so publicly, both at the Glasshouse Theatre and then at the Sydney Opera House, one new building which has an exciting sense of energy and possibility, but then a building that has so much history and legacy there, to marry that with our culture and seeing all the work from our elders that has gotten us to this point. It's us taking up that mantle and continuing their work and hopefully lighting the way for the next generations to do the same.
I'm Marcus Corowa, and I'm playing the role of Yatika. This character is quite unique, and because I haven't been a part of the development at all, this is the first time I'm stepping onto the floor with the rest of the cast. So it's really interesting to be finally doing that and finding all the little things that make this all work, and all the little things that make up the character of Yatika.
I know that as well as doing musical theatre like The Sunshine Club, like Brand New Day,
mm-hmm.
like you've been a singer-songwriter in your own right, and have done just a few years ago an adaptation of Jane Harrison's The Visitors when it was an opera with Victoria Opera. What did you bring from those experiences into this show?
You know, musical theatre is different to opera, which is different from being a singer-songwriter, which is different from, you know, being an actor. So I've done a little bit of each across, you know, my career, and it's really exciting that I can kind of draw on all those aspects and bring it to this particular piece and to this particular character, because this piece is, you know, a contemporary Indigenous piece within an opera setting. So it's really interesting to explore and to find what I've learned over the years and bring that to the floor and to try and experiment and to be like, oh, yeah, this works, or that doesn't work. So one of the biggest challenges in coming to opera is having an open throat sound, a very open sound. So I've worked particularly hard to try and create that, coming from a singer-songwriter background, transitioning into musicals, you know, which is, you know, and it's there, but then there's opera and there's classical, which is an open sound. So that's been a challenge as well, to learn how to use, you know, my instrument in this very open way, which has been exciting, because it's just another, you know, another thing that I can add to my instrument.
I love directing, whatever platform it is. And last night I was up till midnight doing notes on stuff that we're going to, you know, you execute in the rehearsal room. But it was so great as a director to have bigger visions, because you know that your cast are eager, keen, and when you can come and apply those notes and you see the growth in them, it's beautiful, and then you see what they bring to the character. I love watching Nina and Marcus. All of a sudden, Marcus's shoulders are squarer and his body's upright. Because I said, brah, you got that swing there on that din going. I said, you got a 1893. Remember where we are, the pride in Yarraka, and to see that growth is amazing, and to see Nina, you know, a 27-year-old woman playing an older woman, but all of a sudden her shoulders square, and when she has a rifle, but, you know, went with the stance. So it's really beautiful to see that growth. Their singing is next level, and they're all over that, you know. But to see this interpretation of the story come to life through their what they contribute, it's pretty magic, yeah.
And then just finally, this is a story that you've carried for around 10 years now. What's the emotional resonance of that?
Yeah, well, it's actually been more than 10 years. I've carried this story since I was a little girl of 5 years old. My mother, so what am I? I'm 50 years, hey, look out. But, yeah, my mum would read it to me. She had a little book of Henry Lawson's short stories. And that was the first story that I could allow my imagination to run wild, and I could place myself in that story. So it wasn't Goldilocks and the Three Bears or Cinderella. It was Henry Lawson's The Drover's Wife. And why? Because me and my mum were home alone, so I felt like I was the little boy that was protecting his mum, in the sense of my brothers and sisters had moved out. It was me and mum at home. We had a wood stove, so we had our wood heap, and mum would split them logs and make them into chips, and then she'd say to me, don't stack that wood heap hollow or a snake will get in under. So there are actual words from the story. So I let my imagination run wild, and I held that for about at least 43 years before I said I was going to do something with it. I always knew I wanted to do something. And then I was a director in a writer's workshop and got frustrated with them writers, and I said, maybe it's time for me to write my next play. And I went home, and that little book, it's got a red cover, was just sticking out, and I grabbed it and I said, it's time. And away I went. So it's been with me for a very long time. And when me and Bain do anything in our production company, Umbara Productions, we do it Blackfella way, where if we're gonna go for a kill, if we're gonna take a story and utilize it, we'll utilize it until there's nothing left. Like Mob, eh? When we do a kill, we use the hide, we use the bones, we use everything. Nothing's lost. You share it with family and community. And that's what we do with our projects. So if we know we're on a good thing, and we knew we did, I was tackling an Australian classic. How dare I, for a start? But I knew that I'd have an audience from 16-year-olds to 80-year-olds. Drover's Wife is an Australian classic, so I knew I'd get that audience. That's my self, you know, my producer hat on going, am I going to get audiences to this? So we just knew that we were on something. And when I sat down to write that story for the first time, I did it in 7 days, 5 days for Act One, 2 days for Act Two. I said, this is probably going to be crap because I wrote it so quick. But I said to Bain, read this. He went away and read it. That's when I went back and read the story. So I didn't read the story. I just pulled the book out, sat it down, and away I went. And then while he read what I came up with, I went and reread the little 9 pages of the story. And he came back and he said, we're onto something here. This is something special. And it's proved itself with the reimagining, we call it, of each platform that we're trying to sell to the world. But it's working. So far it's working.
What do you want people to take from seeing the opera?
Yeah, I want my audience, I always want, whether I'm performing or a director, I want my audiences to be emotionally moved and intellectually stimulated. I don't want them to get up out of their chair and go, where are we going for coffee? I want them to sit silent for a little while. I want them to take it on. I want the story to come back to them a month later. And I've had evidence of that with the play where I'd receive emails or, you know, messages on Facebook and stuff like that where people have said, we're still talking about our experience in the theatre or in watching the movie or reading the novel. So I want my audiences to come and be brave. This is our Australian history, black and white together. I'm taking two ancient story forms of telling, opera, and then our black storytelling, which is beyond ancient, and bringing those two worlds together. And I'm making them clash at the beginning of this story, and then they find a commonality through it. The opera is the white voice of the high country, and Yarika comes through with his voice and story and movements with the mob. So I want them to be brave to come and see this. This is just a yarn. It's just a yarn. It's something for everyone. It'll have you on the edge of your seats. It'll have you pulling a tear. It'll probably have you hiding your eyes. But don't you want that when you go to the theatre? Don't you want to be stimulated? And I'm not here, I don't like to say I'm an educator. I'm here to just give a black perspective. Because my family's story runs through this. Yarika is loosely based on my great-grandfather's journey from up near Cooktown all the way down to Melbourne. So there's the journey about Yarika's story is based on truth. So I want people to come in and be challenged, be stimulated. And, mate, I think you're going to have a damn good time at the opera because the music takes you on another journey. Mate, if it gets too much for you, close your eyes and listen to the music. You know what I mean? You can do so many things. But that's what I want. I want my audiences to be stimulated. I want them to go out and start conversations. Because I guess for me, the big question for Yarika's journey, how do you judge a black man? Do you judge him by his colour or his character? And that's the question for Yarika. For Molly, it's about finding her identity as a First Nations person, as an Aboriginal woman later in life. And being in such a hard time of 1893, her father's idea was it's hard enough to be a woman, let alone a black woman. And so how she receives that. And as we all do, when you receive that, something special. And she changes her perspective on things. And I just want to continue to tell our yarns and to then also show out the strength in our culture and our Aboriginality and our spirituality.
That was Leah Purcell, librettist and director of The Drover's Wife, the opera. You also heard from Nina Korba and Marcus Corowa. The Drover's Wife opens this month in Brisbane at the Glasshouse Theatre, before heading to the Sydney Opera House in August. To find all the show dates for Brisbane and Sydney, you can visit the official websites of QPAC or Opera Australia. And I'll make sure to pop both website links on Away's show page too.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.